This week, artificially stupid, decryption keys, power plants under attacks, sleeping with the enemy, CAs get the boot, satellite phones are cracked, and burner laptops. Jason Wood joins us with expert commentary on the FTC, who's slapping a whopping $104 million judgment on a loan application firm. All that and more on this episode of Hack Naked News.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show that brings you the security news each week. And despite popular belief, we do wear pants. It's Hack Naked News. Brought to you by... Do you have a website, an external presence, employees, an office? Any of these things can be compromised and attacked. How are you defending these assets? Have you penetration tested these public assets? Start 2017 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night. IT Pro TV, an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. Stream over 2,000 hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content live and on-demand. Premium annual memberships include all video content as well as access to virtual labs and the Q&A forums. You'd pay $85.70 a month or $857 per year, but we have a special offer for our listeners. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your active subscription, visit itpro.tv/hacknaked and use the code HN30. Oh, welcome to Hack Naked News, episode 132 for July 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Paul Asadorian, with the news. But first, some hot and fresh and sticky announcements to go along with the weather today. IT Pro TV's courses now include Computer Hacking Forensic Investigator V9, Kali Linux, CompTIA A+ 901, and Accelerated CompTIA Security Plus. Premium annual memberships include all video content as well as access to virtual labs and Q&A forums. For a limited time, get 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription by visiting itpro.tv/hacknaked and using the discount code HN30. Whether they're phishing, hacking, or spying, threat actors use domains and IP addresses to launch their attacks. And while you might not be interested in targeted attacks yet, targeted attacks are interested in you. Your ability to map and characterize the attacker's infrastructure is crucial to defending yourself. Join Domain Tools Senior Security Researcher Kyle Wilhoit and Director of Product Management Tim Helming on a virtual ride-along using Domain Tools Iris. They will use real-world cases to show you how you can quickly and efficiently expose the adversary's infrastructure. Visit domaintools.com/securityweekly to register and learn how to protect yourself against various crime, espionage, or hacktivism by seeing how investigators and threat hunters work in the trenches. And now, the security news. A new Google project sets out to solve artificial stupidity. Google's PAIR, People Plus Artificial Intelligence Research Project, is interesting as it aims to improve the interaction between humans and computers. Hello, computer. However, the article states, virtual assistants get infuriating when they fail to do something we expect to be within their capabilities. Viegas, one of the researchers, says that she's interested in studying how people form expectations about what such systems can and can't do, and how virtual assistants themselves may be designed to nudge us towards only asking things that won't lead to disappointment. So really, we need to think more like computer. Oh, this is my commentary now. Sorry, end quote. This is from Wired.com as well. So really, we need to think more like computers, which just seems really backwards to me. Shouldn't computers think more like humans? Isn't that the point of artificial intelligence? In any case, I guess not to not be disappointed in your artificial intelligence, you just need to ask it dumber questions, I suppose. Anyway, the link to the article is in the show notes, and you can form your own opinions on the matter. The decryption key to the original Petya ransomware has been released. The master key is to the original version of the Petya ransomware, not to be confused with the latest and massive Petya X-Petter outbreak that swept through the Ukraine and parts of Europe last month has been released, allowing all the victims of the previous Petya attacks to unscramble their encrypted files. That's what the article said. Unscramble your encrypted files. We would say that you're decrypting your encrypted files would be the proper way to say that. Not unscramble. That's bad. Anyway, I always wonder why this happens. My guess is that the popularity of the ransomware no longer makes it feasible to continue to produce and maintain it. There's so many signatures and ways to detect this particular behavior that the ransomware authors are like, eh, whatever, they can have the key. But why give out the key? My theory on this is really strange, but hear me out. So then users will take the easy way out to get their data back and just decrypt it, rather than learn a hard lesson on backups and security. See, the malware authors want you to take the easy way out so you can be the victim of the next campaign and never learn how to properly do backups and security, because they're just going to give you the key after a certain period of time. That's my theory. However lame, that's my theory. In any case, hackers breached a dozen nuclear power plants, according to reports. It seems there's a lot of missing and very strange information here. So I quote, an urgent DHS report indicated a foreign power, probably Russia, was responsible, according to the New York Times. Okay, so let's just blame Russia. Never mind how difficult it is to actually do attribution. Russia, it sounds good. So we'll go with Russia. Another quote is, Wolf Creek Nuclear Operating Corp declined to say if the plant was hacked, but said there had been no operational impact at the plant. I suppose aside from performing incident response and tying up personnel to determine that there was no operational impact was the operational impact. The article then goes on to say the reason that this is true is because the operational computer systems are completely separate from the corporate network, and corporate network even, spokeswoman Jenny Hageman told Reuters. Translation, critical systems are air-gapped, therefore we are secure. I think I just threw up in my mouth a little while saying that, actually. You have to, hold on, I have to pause there. Okay, I'm better now. Trump thinks we should create joint cybersecurity with Russia. There, now there's more puke in my mouth. So Russia is largely known to be behind election hacking. However difficult attribution is, it's largely regarded to be responsible for the election hacking. So we should then partner with them to make certain they don't hack any more elections. While this makes little sense to most of us, sleeping with the enemy doesn't necessarily make things better, unless you're after a cheap thrill. I have no further comments on that matter, to be honest with you. Anyway, the Google guillotine has fallen on certificate authorities, according to a Google Groups post published by Chrome security engineer Devin O'Brien, due to several incidents, in quotes, involving the certificate authority have not been keeping up with the high standards expected of CAs. Google Chrome has already begun phasing out WoSign and StartCom by only trusting certificates issued prior to October 21st, 2016. Apple was also quick to follow. However, this is a cat and mouse game that will continue for some time, perhaps forever, as long as SSL is built on trust. Satellite phone encryption calls can be cracked in fractions of a second. The new attack method has been discovered by two Chinese security researchers and is based on previous research by German academicians in 2012. That's a very strange word, academicians, showing that the phone's encryption can be cracked so quickly that attackers can listen on calls in real time. The research disclosed in the paper published last week by the International Association for Cryptologic Research focused on the GMR-2 encryption algorithm that is commonly being used in most modern satellite phones, including British Satellite Telecom Inmarsat. When I read that, it made sense. Now when I say it out loud, it doesn't. Anyway, to encrypt voice calls in order to prevent eavesdropping, the new findings spark concerns surrounding the security of satellite phones, which are mostly used by field officers in war zones that protect our land, air, and water. Nothing important or anything. As well as people in remote areas because there is really no other alternative for them. burner laptops for DEF CON. If you're attending the world's largest hacking convention this summer, you may want to consider a lot of things in terms of your own personal security or OPSEC, such as a burner laptop. That is, a laptop that you take to the conference, then you come home and you set it on fire. I guess, well, that's why they call it a burner laptop. You don't necessarily have to set it on fire. Formatting it is probably, we did a whole segment on that. You could blow it up, whatever. It's a burner laptop. Lots of things to consider, and security blogger Robert Graham walks us through his choices. There's a lot of pros and cons, more cons than pros, I think, to the $200 or $300 laptop chosen by Robert. Personally, I will bring a Chromebook, which encrypts local files. All of my Chrome settings have a password, which also does encryption, albeit not that great from what I'm told. I do have two-factor authentication with YubiKey enabled, and don't leave your YubiKey plugged into your laptop while you're walking around DEF CON, probably bad. All wireless is disabled, and I will only tether using USB on 4G. You can go to even greater lengths if you choose, and bring a book and a pen and a paper. What are you doing to protect yourself at Black Hat and DEF CON this year? Send us an email, psw@securityweekly.com. We want to know. Check the main page, securityweekly.com, immediately following the show. I will update it with two technical segments that we have published for you on protecting yourself at conferences. Now a very short break, and we will come back with expert commentary from Jason Wood on a recent FTC ruling. Stay tuned. Has your network been breached? Cyber Reason can help you answer this question. Cyber Reason products hunt for threats within your network and eliminate them in real time. To Cyber Reason, real time means within seconds. Founded by former military hackers who don't play by the rules, they've built this experience into their platform. Harness ingenuity and imagination, not just code, to defeat attackers. Cyber Reason, disrupt the adversary and let the hunt begin. Gain control of cyber risk with Tenable.io, the first vulnerability management platform built for today's elastic assets like cloud, containers, and web apps. Discover a fresh, asset-based approach that prioritizes vulnerabilities while seamlessly integrating into your environment. And improve ROI with the first elastic licensing approach based on assets, not IP addresses. Tenable.io delivers the data and context you need to secure your elastic attack surface. Start your free Tenable.io trial today by visiting Tenable.io.
Come check out Wild West Hackin' Fest, put on by Black Hills Information Security on October 27th through the 28th for hands-on hardware hacking workshops and talks by famous infosecers like Dave Kennedy, Deviant, Egypt, Chris Nickerson, Mike Poor, Sub-T, Chris Gates, and more. Register today at wildwesthackinfest.com, HACKINFest.com. The first B-Sides in Uganda is upon us. B-Sides Kampala is being held on October 14th through the 15th. The CFP is open for just a few more days. It closes on July 15th. They're looking for awesome topics on security, including evolutionary computing robotics. Bonus points for bringing your actual robot. Visit bsideskampala.com and submit your talk today. Now, the expert commentary with expert Jason Wood from Paladin Security. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, Paul. Good to be here again.
Yes. Nice to have you on, talking about how the FTC is slapping a $104 million judgment. Is that, do they mean lawsuit? Is that that's what the FTC does?
Essentially,
right?
Yeah.
Is it a ruling or a judgment or a lawsuit? Is there a difference? I'm not sure. I said judgment earlier.
Yeah, they took their whatever authority they have to do is to hit them with a civil case. And apparently the company that was sued or targeted or whatnot by the FTC settled for this $104 million lawsuit.
Okay, so it's a lawsuit, and there was a $104 million settlement with the FTC.
That's what I understand, yeah.
Okay.
And I thought this was kind of interesting, partly because actually the other day I was thinking about, you know, all the mail you get about lending stuff and ads that pop up on various sites and thinking, you know, how hard would it be for somebody to pose as some kind of lender and gather up financial information? Well, then here we find this blog post on Sophos's Naked Security blog about this company named Blue Global Media that noted that did essentially that. And notice that this headline says loan application firm, not lending firm. What these guys did is they had 25, 30 some websites that they had set up over a various period of time, and they would advertise I'm assuming rather aggressively for loans, with the idea that, hey, you'll get a great rate, you'll get the loan you want and all this other stuff. But they didn't actually do any lending. They said they would farm it out to their trusted partners. And then, you know, you would get offers for the loans. The problem that they ran into is that the FTC had, rather, is that they were selling this data really to anybody, not lenders. In fact, one of the numbers I saw, they said something like 2% of the partners were actually lenders in the first place. So anybody so willing
what,
to...
I'm sorry, Jason, what percentage of people actually got a loan?
They didn't say in the article. They said not many, or, you know, it was a smaller percentage. But they just kind of indicated that, you put in your information, maybe you got a loan, but, or an offer for a loan, but probably you didn't.
Interesting. So it was just, they were just having you fill out the application and then basically selling that data all over the place.
Exactly. $200 a lead and everything that you would submit as part of a loan document. So, you know, name, address, social security number, where you work, how much you make, are you a protected veteran, you know, anything really that would go along those lines that you'd expect to fill out on a loan document. And they would just sell this out to whoever decided to pony up for that.
It's interesting. Having just bought a car, I filled out a car loan application. And yeah, there's a lot of sensitive information in there. And one of the things I've noticed kind of in line with this story, and the FTC is awesome cracking down on this kind of stuff. And this is what I was told. I haven't done the research to see if I was just being fed a line. I requested the car dealership. I said, look, I've bought quite a few cars in my lifetime, right? And I always get calls from warranty places asking me if I want to renew or purchase an additional warranty on my vehicle. And oftentimes they're vehicles that I don't even own anymore. And I requested, I'm like, look, when I buy this car, I don't want my name and my number on any of those lists. I don't want you sharing my information with anyone. What I was told, and he said, yep, I got that form right here. He's like, we're going to, you know, basically you're not giving us authorization. He's like, that's fine. He said, but the registry, the state DMV, sells that information. And I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah, actually, I had an interesting experience with that as well, because recently I just changed auto insurance. My son hit 16, and so my rates went through the roof. And so in the process of getting quotes, I went to one site and I, you know, filled out some very basic information about myself. I think it was like my name and my birthday. And it came back and said, oh, well, here are your two cars. And they were correct. And so you immediately are just like, you just pulled the Department of Motor Vehicles in Utah and got that data. So yes, there's a little fundraiser, you know, for the state of Utah.
And I've noticed that too. Some verification steps, are like, well, you can't log in or prove that you're you, you know, which one of these vehicles have you owned in the past 3 years or whatever. And it was, and actually one of the vehicles I owned was on that list. I'm like, well, that's creepy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that gets into a lot of these, companies like LexisNexis and was it ChoicePoint or whatever that, you know, collects all this information and they sell that. I know I've talked to folks that work at financial companies that, you know, they have their services built for that, and they'll sit there and ask questions and say, you know, just to verify who you are, can you tell me about this whatever from when you were in college? And their clients are like, how did you know that?
Yeah. Creepy. Well, and it relates back to this, and that's one of the reasons I'm glad FTC is coming down on organizations like this, because collecting and selling information, that's some activity that requires, I believe, this kind of federal legislation and oversight to make sure that consumers are protected. And obviously, the FTC was trying to protect consumers in this instance. However, there's, I think, still some gross negligence going on in terms of certain pieces of information, actually related to this loan application process as well. So now, is this company still in business today?
So they're not, which, you know, they've been fined $104 million, but the judgment has, collection of the judgment has already been placed on hold because they're out of money. But the FTC did have a number of problems with these guys in particular because, you know, hey, we're going to get you a loan. Well, no, not really. We're just going to sell your information. And they also didn't like the fact that they really didn't care what the company, you know, how to transmit the data to these companies or anything like that. It was, you know, security was not an issue. It was just send it over. So, you know, I'm picturing emails and crap like that floating around. And so anyhow, yeah, the FTC slapped them down for it. But essentially, the company's gone defunct. The only penalty that they have incurred really is the CEO of the company, as well as the company itself, which is now going out of business, have some limitations on what they're allowed to do in the business world. But yeah, the judgment is
they can't just go start up another company. They're going to be watching them essentially.
Essentially, yeah, yeah. They can't misrepresent things like this anymore. Mm. So, well, I'm sure they can. It's just, you know, the next case will add into it, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, it's borderline fraud, right? I mean, I'm not sure what the users were told in the fine print or anything like that, but it certainly could be a case, and maybe there are other cases where the owners of the company have been held liable for some kind of fraud, which could carry federal criminal prosecution.
Right, and we've talked about other examples with that one. I can't remember the company we talked about here on the show, but you know, it was one of these support companies, and they were being held for criminal liability.
Right.
That wasn't handled by the FTC. They only deal with civil type of stuff, but the Department of Justice, that one. You know, and yeah, it seems fraudulent to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not what the FTC deals in. You'd kind of like to see somebody like the DOJ pick up on stuff like this. And
yeah, it could be the case too, where the just disbanding the company, like making this company go away, was enough prosecution in this case. To take that route, certainly, and putting limitations on how they can do business in the future with any new companies was probably good enough.
Yeah, my fear is they just open up a new company later and try it again with a slightly different twist, and their lawyers say, well, no, it's different because of smoke and mirrors.
Right, exactly.
But we'll see. One of the interesting things that I thought of out of this, and this is something that has crossed mind a couple of different times, particularly as you sit through security awareness training and whatnot, this might be a really good example to cite. Hey, look what this company was doing and how they were handling things. In security awareness training to try and make this more real and relevant. Hey, let's point at specific instances where companies are doing things and misrepresenting what they're claiming to do. Make it a little bit more real for your users, employees or whatnot. I think too often when we sit in a lot of awareness training, you're sitting here, oh my gosh, this is boring and tedious and relates to me in no way, shape, or form. Story like this, you know, hey, no, here's a real event and here's where it happened and here's the people and, you know, the impact. So, you know, it's just kind of an add-on. I did a blog post on this actually today on the Paladin Security blog, but the idea that, hey, you know, point at things like this and use this inside of training because that can also help out because it becomes more real to your users because they're seeing things in the real world, not these hypothetical things out here. John went out and did whatever. So I think that could be also useful.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason, for coming on the show today. That concludes this episode of Hack Naked News. See everyone next time.